David Lee Roth on 92.3 Free FM.
How is it cloudy on TV?
Oh, it's beautiful, Mike. It really is.
Your attention, please. David Lee Roth, first thing in the morning. We only do this because we love you.
Body language, man. Better tell what you're thinking, baby.
I got a very special guest. Her name is Janine Driver. She's the world-renowned body language expert, specializes in detecting when the folks is lying. She's also from the International Deception Detection Experts, and she also attended the Institute of Analytical Interviewing, and she's the one who teaches law enforcement how to detect liars here. Put her on there one time there, Hutch. Janine, are you with us?
Yes, David Lee Roth. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm lying to you. You'd know that if you could see me.
I'm out of D.C., but I've been listening on DavidLeeRoth.com. So interesting.
Outstanding. Janine, please explain to us who you are and what you do.
Well, I call myself the Lion Tamer, L-Y-I-N Tamer.
Luck it.
And I travel all around the world, actually, teaching companies and corporations on how to, A, tell people are lying, like it's great for recruiters, right?
Sure.
You know what's behind the resume, what's truthful in us. But then I teach you how to interpret body language to increase sales and clientele. It's been an interesting journey.
And is this something that you created? All art forms, all sciences have to start with one person. Is this something that you created and then perfected?
You know, I was interested since a young age. I was lied to, like, at 4 years old by someone. And ever since, I've just been really fascinated with body language. I've read every book that there is. And my stuff, the stuff that I'm teaching in body language and detecting deception, is all science-based. I worked with two different individuals, Dr. Paul Ekman. He's huge. He was just in the book Blink by Malcolm Gladwell. They talk about him, Paul Ekman, a couple times.
What kind of a doctor is he?
He is a psychologist, and what he did is over in the 60s, he wanted to find out if body language, if it's universal, and he went over to New Guinea and found out that there's 7 universal facial expressions with regard to emotions. There's 7 universal emotions. It doesn't matter if you're from Japan, you know, Baltimore, Maryland, or New York City. We show them all the same, these 7 different emotions.
I spent 6 weeks in the highland jungles of New Guinea. I crossed the Star Mountains on foot with a girlfriend and 2 of my buddies. I've seen those 7 facial expressions. If I'm not mistaken, they go like this. I'm hungry, I'm cold, I'm freezing, I'm really hungry, I'm super hungry, and if I don't get something to eat, this is the last one. I'm going to kill you and eat you. What are the 7 facial expressions,
well,
Janine?
What do you think some of them are? What's universal?
I beg your pardon? Go
what
ahead.
What do you think? What would you say is kind of universal?
Oh, okay. Right away, I would think laughter.
Yeah, so happiness.
It would be it. I think anger.
Anger, good. Yes,
okay. Fear response, fight or flight.
Fear, right. Wow, you're on fire.
Okay. I think sexual attractability or sexual desirability.
No, that would kind of go under happiness.
Wait. I'd go under extreme happiness. I want a B class on this one.
Happiness, fear, there's sadness, anger, surprise.
And hunger.
No, contempt and disgust.
Contempt and disgust. What's the difference between contempt and disgust on the front of somebody's skull?
Question, David, I'm glad you asked that because it's a huge difference. So when would you make it something disgusting? Like if something smelled disgusting, you were just disgusted with someone who they are as a human being, you might make a disgust sign. Now, disgust is we just wrinkle our nose. Like, just think if you're smelling something really gross, right? It's like, ugh.
Sure.
That's disgust. And what will happen is disgust could leak out. If I was in law enforcement and I came up to you and said, you know, I have to ask you a few questions, David Lee Roth, your nose might wrinkle really fast. Actually, it happened in the O.J. Simpson case when Cato Kalin was on the stand.
Sure.
Marsha Clark asked him some questions about whether or not he has a book coming out. Isn't it true that the reason you're here is you want to get publicity for your book? And he does this little micro expression, it's called, a little teeny micro expression of disgust. His nose wrinkles and comes down. He said on the stand, no, I don't have a book. It later was proved that he was lying. And, in fact, he did have a book, and he had disgust towards Marsha Clark because she called him on it.
Interesting calls here.
The question you had, though, is disgust and contempt. Contempt is moral superiority. I am better than you.
This is what Saddam Hussein is peddling to the Superior Court judge currently on CNN every episode, correct?
Without a doubt. You know who just had contempt? I don't know if you heard about this big scandal on Oprah, but Oprah supported this book called A Million Little Pieces by
James Frey.
James Frey.
Sure.
Well, James Frey then had the courage. I mean, I got to give him credit. He came, went back on Oprah and kind of faced the music, right?
Sure.
Well, while he was there, different reporters from all these different magazines, newspapers, well-respected reporters are in Oprah's audience, and they're kind of letting him have it. At one point, one of the reporters challenges James Frey and says that, you know, what he did was wrong, et cetera. And James Frey shows contempt towards that person. And I actually taped it to start showing my classes. It's an awesome expression of contempt. Contempt is the only unilateral facial expression. It's when our mouth, one side of our lip, almost goes up in a smile, only one side. It's the only unilateral expression, and contempt is moral superiority. So what James Frey was saying is, who are you to call me a liar? You're no good. I'm better than you.
Gotcha. So he's not remorseful at all. Just his agenda remains as it was.
Well, he might be remorseful, but he didn't appreciate. It's one thing if Oprah calls him to the carpet, but he had no respect for this guy that was calling him.
No, he's not remorseful about the action. He's remorseful about getting caught.
Well, I think you're right on that.
There's a big difference there. And you're saying that contempt, for example, is the same on the face of a Navajo Indian as it would be on an Eskimo who lives a million miles away.
Correct. And I don't care if you're a 4-year-old or you're a 94-year-old. It is the same. It is scientifically proven.
Are these learned responses that we pick up from our parents or our siblings?
David, that's why Paul Ekman in the 60s could go over to New Guinea where he went to tribesmen. They didn't speak English. He brought an interpreter. They never saw American television. They've never been exposed to the world. And what he did, Ekman, is he showed them pictures. He'd show a picture of fear and would say to the people, he'd say, when would you see this expression? The interpreter would ask that same question. They'd say, when a wild bull would or wild pig or boar would come in to attack my baby.
Ah.
So this is what he did. He showed these different actual pictures. What does this mean? And that's how it's completely scientifically based. A lot of your callers today, although they were very interesting and animated, a lot of the things they were saying on detecting deception were completely wrong.
Okay, well, that's why we have experts like you, Janine Driver. She's a body language expert, and she also is a language expert for Justice Magazine. Tell us what Justice Magazine is, Jenny.
It's a new magazine that came out about, I'd say, 6 months ago, and it explores different famous people and every different types of people, ordinary people, your neighbor, anyone who gets arrested. And what they do is they send me different pictures of the people either in court or leaving court, et cetera, and I have to analyze what's going on with their body language.
You know, this is fascinating because we have so many court TV shows, you know, whether it's the SWAT team in Dallas or whether it's Nancy Grace or any of the political orientations, and everybody seems to be on trial for something, allegedly. Everybody's being arraigned for somebody, for something, whether it's the kid who supposedly kidnapped Holloway down in Aruba, or whether it's the judge who let the child molester get off with 60 days in Vermont. Everybody's getting interviewed in multi-angle camera and high definition. You must be having a field day for your art form.
You know, thank God for TiVo, David. That's all I have to say, because I'm constantly TiVoing, and I literally will watch a tape like 30, 40 times just to see, okay, I'm looking for micro-expressions. We call it leakage. It's subconscious. You don't want to let me know what this emotion is that's leaking, but it leaks out really subtly. It's really, really fast. And actually, I have an awesome tool that was created by Dr. Paul Ekman called the Micro-Expression Training Tool. I use in my classes to help people, especially salespeople, right? Or even the health industry. You want to know if someone is hiding an emotion. What are they really feeling here? And I teach people this awesome tool where we have different faces and they make a quick micro expression. And within an hour, I take a pretest, and within an hour, people are 85% better at recognizing emotions.
Outstanding. Where do we find out more about this, Janine Driver?
People can visit my website at LionTamer, LYIN. Tamer, TAMER.com.
And can you be hired for seminars? If we wanted to get you down here and lecture the room for an hour, are you available for those kinds of travels?
Absolutely. I used to live in New York City up there at 95th and 3rd, Upper East Kid there for several years.
One of the most lying parts of the world,
yeah.
Arguably.
Yeah.
Who comprises most of your clients now, Janine?
You know, it's ironic, but it's not ironic, just weird, because I've never done real estate. I own a house, but I've never done real estate. But I speak to real estate people on 90% of the time. It's referral-based. I go out there, it's something new, it's something different. You see, a lot of people who talk about body language, they just talk about, like, your arms are crossed, it means you're bored and disinterested, right? Or one of your callers said, if you, or I think you may have said, if you cross your leg. away from the individual, it means that they're no longer interested.
And is that a correct assumption?
No.
Oh, really?
This is what happened. This is why my material, my courses are very unique, because I teach you to look for norming. You have to find out what someone's normal behavior is.
Ah.
For instance, every time Ellen DeGeneres, her show, she always has her leg away from the person who's there. That's just her normal behavior. So what I teach people is you want to look for hot spots. You want to norm them, find out what their normal behavior is, even with the eyes, right? People were talking about if you look to the left, it's recall. If you look to the right, it's creating an answer.
What's your answer to that?
Well, first of all, you were right. Your caller was incorrect.
I knew it! I'm way too successful in my love life for this not to have been absolutely beyond reproach. Thank you so goddamn much.
No, but here's the problem.
It's the most validating moment of my whole broadcast career here. And you guys are all liars.
David, here's the deal, though. You have to norm the person because
I don't hang out with anybody normal, darling, but please reacquaint us.
But I may look to the right when I'm trying to recall. So you want to norm them, and how you find out someone's normal behavior, you might say, you know, Janine, where did you grow up? Tell me about where you grew up. I have no reason to lie about that. If you see, as I'm telling you about where I grew up, I constantly am looking to the right. Then, if I go to the left to recall an answer, you have to norm me. That would be called a hot spot.
Gotcha. I'm learning something as we go here. Roth Radio, we're talking to Janine Driver. She is the body language expert. Please continue. This is fascinating material here.
Well, listen, I love it, and I'd love to come to New York or anywhere where any of your listeners are to teach them more about it. But with this norming, so that's just one example. With eye contact, like looking to the left or the right, what you need to do is, now, say if I said to you, describe a picture of your mother's head, your mother's face. If I said, tell me about your mother's face, what does it look like? You might, David, go to the right, which is typically creating an answer, because you're seeing your mother's head kind of floating in air.
Sure.
And you've never seen that before.
Ah.
A body language expert that's been trained, if you look to the left, it's recall. If you look to the right, it's creating an answer. It's going to say, oh, David's lying.
Gotcha.
To the right. Well, you know what? You cannot get in someone's brain. So that's actually been scientifically proven incorrect, right and left. It's been proven completely incorrect because you don't know what they're actually thinking about.
Gotcha. So it's like calibrating a lie detector.
Correct.
Fascinating.
So the best thing, the ideal, number one way, I'm going to give you a couple tips on how to tell people.
Take your time. This is great work. Go ahead.
But I'm going to give you some tips, but I will say number one are the seven universal emotions, right? We talked about those: happiness, sadness, fear, anger, contempt, surprise, disgust. Those are the seven. That is the ideal way because our face is completely linked to the part of the brain that affects emotion. So if I can teach you to look for this simple little micro expression in the face, then you're easy sailing from there. That's number one.
Amazing.
Number two, detecting deception. You've got to look for inconsistencies. These things I call hot spots. Dr. Paul Ekman calls them hot spots. There's another person, Dr. Mark Frank. He's up in SUNY over there in New York. He studies, you know, fascination with detecting deception. One of the other things there, like Bill Clinton, he said, I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
And what was the micro move there?
He was nodding his head, yes. Well, I'm sorry, your head up and down, shaking yes, does not mean I did not have sexual relations with this woman.
That makes perfect sense. You know, I had Russian grandparents who would shake their head no when they meant yes, as in, did I just screw up, Grandma? And
right.
she would go shake her head like no and go, oh, yeah.
You're in trouble. But again, so cultural, that if a different country, if yes means you shake your head no, then you have to norm them. So, but here in the United States, Bill Clinton, come on, when you shake your head yes and you're saying no, when the two don't match, David, when body language doesn't match what they're saying, you always believe the nonverbal communication.
Is it a stupid pedestrian trick to just turn off the sound the third time you TiVo it?
I do it every time. Oh, wow, you're awesome. You should be my opening act for my next class.
I'm a professional liar. I sing in a band. 866-313-3733. Give us a call if you've got a question here for Janine Driver. Go ahead and dial one in here. Janine, take a call with us if you would.
Okay.
Go ahead, friend. You're on.
Hey, this is Johnny from Jersey. How you doing?
Good, Johnny. What's your question?
Well, I know when my girlfriend lies. Usually she tells me, you know, I'm the best she's ever had. But I've found that actually when people are lying, usually they're adamant about saying that they're telling the truth.
Janine, answer to that if you would.
Well, that is actually, it tends to be an indicator. Again, you want to norm someone because if they always do that, then that would be their normal behavior. It's when they deviate from their normal behavior. If typically when you're asking a girlfriend or a significant other questions and they just flat out tell you the answer and then they don't follow it up, seriously, I'm telling you the truth, I swear to God. But if all of a sudden you're asking them, you know, where were you last night? I know you're not going to believe this, but, or I swear to God, but, any of those things where it's but, you have to believe that what's coming is going to be probably a hot spot. I'd want to ask more questions there. I wouldn't say it's definitely a lie, but I'd want to explore that more.
Thanks
yeah,
for...
I think when they elaborate, I just feel like you just can't trust them right off the bat.
Now, Johnny, to give you a little tip, what you can say is if you suspect that someone's lying to you, you say this. You say, is there any reason why, and then you fill it in. You know, is there any reason why, you know, a friend of mine told me he saw you holding hands with someone yesterday. And the person would say, a truthful person would just say, no. A liar will elaborate. Well, no, I mean, I don't know, maybe. I mean, I was walking on the street with a friend of mine. We were just joking around. A liar will want to elaborate because they want to be believed.
It sounds like they're searching for the words that are circling around them.
Right. So is there any reason why? After that, after you let them yak a little bit, then you say, really? And now they go through it all again. Then you pause, you tilt your head to the side, and just listen. You need to shut your mouth and let them bury themselves alive. And at the end, the final lion tamer quick tip is you say, is there something you want to get off your chest?
This is, I got to start taking notes. My friend, are you still on the phone there?
Yes. Yeah, so,
and knowing all of this material, is your girlfriend now a compulsive liar? Does she lie to you all the time?
No. It's just that you could tell. So, like she said, if it's not normal behavior, then it's really easy to figure it out.
Okay, well, now you know how to look for it, and then you can tune in on Mondays when we have Elizabeth Haight, our relationship specialist, and she'll help you through the rest of your life.
Cool. Awesome.
Thanks for calling. 866-313-3733. And I'm talking to Janine Driver, body language expert. Janine, what about people who blink and fidget all the time, and then when they lie to you, that's the only time that they make direct, unblinking eye contact, and they come to a complete static hold. Is that a familiar?
Said it. Things I teach, especially law enforcement, when I go out there and teach, is you might get someone who, when you're just norming them, they're already fidgety, they're moving their hands, they're blinking a lot. All of a sudden, you're asking them a question, they sit on their hands, they're not moving, they're giving you increased eye contact. Again, it's a deviation in their normal behavior. I would call it a hot spot. I wouldn't say they're lying. It's a hot spot. What's going on there? Because sometimes what happens, David, is when you see a hot spot, it's the person is nervous about being believed, so they're exhibiting signs of deception.
Okay, Janine, I have a few commercials here. It's an important part of the process. Can you hang on the phone here for a few more minutes?
Because
my phones have lit up. Every single line is blasting. Evidently, we are a culture that lies to each other. So what's new? It's not exactly headlines. Don't go away. We'll be right back with body language expert Janine Driver right after this. You guys are a bunch of liars, man. Did we just get dead space on that? You have no idea what's going on in here, and this is the gear that we've been working on here since for the last 2 months here, my friend. They eat the CD player. The microphone shuts off at least 4 times per show. The channel that is my microphone is no longer functional.
Nope. The blender blew up, and we run out of margarita mix.
We've got margarita mix everywhere. On a scale of 1 to 10, I give this a solid 2 on technical superbiosity, but on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm giving my current guest here, Janine Driver, an 11. Janine, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
God bless you, Janine. We have a bunch of phone calls here. You want to take a couple more phone calls with us?
I'd love to.
Okay, Janine Driver, she's our body language expert. She's also the official body language expert for Justice Magazine. Dial in whichever one there, Hutch. Roth Radio, you're talking to David Lee. Matt, go ahead.
That's Matt.
Hey, Dave, how are you?
Extraordinary. Got a question for Janine?
Big fan. I do. First of all, how could this apply to, they should teach people before they go on jury duty. I think that would be really helpful.
Talk to that, Janine. What do you think?
You know, it's very interesting. I'm actually teaching a bunch of judges. I'm teaching about 12 judges in Washington, D.C. next week. And
really?
What happened was I have a dating class, how to have a date 6 nights a week if you want. What are women saying with their body language to men, and what are men saying with their body language to women? And it
Now, on the other hand, I feel it could be, like, if you knew at all times what people were thinking, it would almost be to make you a little paranoid. You go up to a girl in a bar, and you're trying to do your best, trying to pick her up or whatever, and all of a sudden you feel like she's, it's almost like reading minds, like she's saying, okay, let me get away from this.
Okay,
person.
Hold on. Janine, go ahead and speak to that.
Yeah, speak to the dating thing?
Sure.
Well, here's the dating, it's funny because for me, I have to turn it on or off or else I become like Jim Carrey in that movie where he becomes God. You know, what's that? All the prayers start coming in. It's like all this information. The beauty of using body language with dating is you know when to approach the woman at the right time and when not to approach her. Because, guys, I hate to tell you, you're not all that good with reading body language.
Are we just not that good, or are we just in selective denial?
Well, you know what they find, David? You know, you're a ladies' man. You see a good-looking woman, you want to just go over to her. Well, you know what? If my belly button is facing my friend's belly button and we're kind of squared off having a conversation, then that's not the time you want to come in. We want to wait until my friend and I, we open up our body posture about 30%. I call it the door hinge theory.
Sure.
You want to open the door a little. Once our door opens up a little bit, that says we're welcome for conversation.
And what does it mean when those little knees slam shut with the same final sound as the front door at Folsom Prison? Yeah, that's what I thought. 866-313-3733. I'm talking to Janine Driver. She's our body language expert. Give us another call here. Hutch, Roth Radio, New York, Philly, Dallas, Boston, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and West Palm Beach. Get it.
Lee.
You're on. Lee.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Lee. What's up?
Not much. Listen, I was watching Scott McClellan, the mouthpiece for the Bush administration, on C-SPAN the other night.
Certainly.
And I want to know, if somebody is a master of deflection and deception, how do you know what their norm is? Or do we just assume that whenever this guy opens his mouth, it's a lie?
Go ahead, Janine.
Norming, you want to find out, when is the person going to be talking when they have no reason to lie about it? Like, if I met someone in a bar, I might say, oh, I just bought my niece her first bike. I remember the first bike I had when I was a kid. You remember your bike? You know, you kind of start small talking. So if you're watching political figures, you're going to have to watch when they're just talking about an announcement. I'm sure you can go on Google and you can find other interviews of them where they're just talking about their family, their career, etc. You have to find out the norm. Now, all of a sudden, if you're watching someone interview, all of a sudden, they clear their throat or drink a glass of water, or they repeat the question, now, what was that, Senator? And they repeat the question. Those are hot spots. That's where I would want to find out more information, because there potentially could be a big lie right there.
I call that playing for time. When somebody repeats the question, you know, you say, hey, what time is it? And they go, what time is it? They're playing for time. Their brain is 30 meters in front of them. Do you agree or disagree?
Oh, completely. In my world, it's called the stalling technique. So you're right on the money there, David.
Okay. Hey, thanks for calling, my friend. What about deception techniques that will actually hold up in a court of law? Do you make appearances in a court of law, Janine? And
does not interest me. I'm kind of a more playful, goofy kind of kid. So it would bore me to death to sit in a courtroom watching a jury. It's not something I'm interested in. I don't mind teaching law enforcement. I don't mind teaching judges on what they need to look for, but I myself am not a jury consultant where I'm going to sit in there and tell you what jury people you should pick. I mean, that's just not interesting.
Understood. Number 14, he has an interesting question here. Tom, you're on. Go ahead.
Hey, if you're a body language expert, would it make you a better liar, or are your emotions still going to leak out?
I love the way our audience thinks. Go ahead, Janine.
Awesome.
Take your time.
That is an awesome, awesome question. I love it, I love it, I love it. And I'm a terrible liar, because what happens is when I lie, because we all lie, right? When I lie, inside my brain, I'm like, uh-oh, my eyes just look left, uh-oh, my tone of voice just changed, uh-oh, I crossed my arms, uh-oh, I'm shifting my body. I'm like recognizing all these hot spots I'm doing. So I have all this internal talk, and it's not a good thing. I need to just be a truthful person, or else I drive myself nuts.
Are you a good liar yourself, Tom? I think we lost him. 866-313-3733. Are you a decent liar yourself currently?
Me?
Skip him. Janine, not you, sweetie. Go up here on the top where it talks about voice detection. Janine, does your body language expertise extend into tonal sounds? You know, the kinds of, you talked about coughing. You talked about playing for time or actually stalling. These are vocal techniques, and does body language extend itself into that study as well?
Correct, because, you know, body language is one thing. I actually call it nonverbal communication, right? Because nonverbal communication includes pitch, includes all these different things. Your rate of speech, that's nonverbal. Verbal communication. Body language is just what your body's saying. But typically when people do talk about body language, they're talking about nonverbal communication, which is 50 to 90% of what we communicate with others is nonverbal communication. When you change your pitch, David, okay, so now you're
talking... What do you mean?
When you go up, it represents anger or fearfulness.
No way!
Yeah, and when you go down, when your pitch goes down, it represents sadness.
Okay.
So now I want to see if it fits in the situation. So if I'm talking to you about something that's supposed to be exciting, you just got engaged, as you're telling me about your engagement story, your pitch kind of goes down and softens, that's sadness. So that says to me there's a deviation in the norm, that's a hot spot. Why is this person sad when they're telling me a story that should be joyful?
Why did you have to bring up my relationships? You're the best guest yet. Hey, let me talk to John here. He's talking about lying and voice detection, too. Maybe he's got a good question. John, Roth Radio, you're talking to G-Row. Go ahead.
Hey, what's up, Dave?
Go ahead, friend. Ask Janine the question.
My question was kind of along the lines of the question that you asked about the tone of voice. I used to work in a rehab center in northeastern Connecticut. And we used to work with, you know, recovering drug addicts and people that were kind of off the streets. And, like, so we, a lot of the younger girls, it was an adolescent program, and a lot of times with the female, the females in the program, we used to listen for certain things in their voice to tell if maybe they were hiding something from their past. And I worked with a really good lady there named Phyllis, who was the head clinician. And she could pick out a lot of things, like if a young girl had been maybe molested or something like that by a family member, like in the tone of her voice, like if she had a squeak to her voice or something, like, or a low, mellow, kind of a high-pitched voice. Right. She could pick out a lot of things about things that she was hiding from her past, like if, like a sad tone to her voice, if she knows anything about that.
Right, right. Well, same thing. I just said, John, a couple seconds ago that when the pitch goes down, it represents sadness, and when it goes up, it's usually anger and fearfulness. And I'll tell you, with lying, it typically goes up. About 70% of people who've been studied, when they lie, their pitch will go up.
What about a lie detector test, Janine? Is this considered body language as well? Because it's all pulse and rhythm and so forth. How does that work into it?
David Lee Roth, why don't you take a quarter out of your pocket and flip it? Tell them the truth or tell them a lie, and you'll get the same result.
Oh, really?
It's a terrible tool. I mean, know what it is? It's a tool to intimidate someone to tell the truth. It's actually more on the polygraph examiner who's asking you the questions, because then they play little mind games with you, right? Like, wow, you're really good. They ask you baseline questions, right? Baselining, norming, it's all the same stuff. Calibrating. They ask you these baseline norming questions, and they go, wow, this lie detector here, this polygraph machine really picks up on it when you're lying. You're great. Look at this. This is unbelievable. It really gets you. All right, let's ask some questions. It intimidates you so you can come clean. Kind of like that formula I gave you earlier. Is this something you want to get off your chest?
Thanks. Jim here thinks his wife is cheating. Jim, what was your first clue?
No, I just wanted to let you guys know that this show sucks balls. You guys need to freaking get off the radio.
No wonder your wife is cheating on you, you ass breath sissy. Anyways, Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. And I wasn't lying. Vito, lying in sales. What's the difference? If you're a salesperson, are you just essentially a liar and on a moral bias? Go ahead, Vito.
Oh, that's not entirely true. But,
no, I'm asking the question, Vito. I'm asking, isn't sales a version of lying anyway?
Sometimes, yeah.
No, if you're going to use your tone to pump up something and make it exciting, I mean, how exciting can a flower pot really be? But if you're going to use your tone and you're going to use your hands and you're going to start getting perspiration and pointing and gesturing, then that's a form of exaggeration, which is kind of lying, right?
You know what, David, can I interrupt there?
Please do.
I don't think sales is typically lying. That would not be my take on it, because if I go to Germany and I speak English, and they might understand me, but if I can speak German, they're going to understand me better. So in sales, if I can teach people how to use their body language to get their message across the best possible way, they're just communicating the most effective way possible. They're not using hypnosis or, like, tricking people into buying something that they don't want to buy. They're getting their message across in the most effective way possible.
Are there different levels of lying? My parents used to call it fibbing and then lying, and you could get away with a fib, but you got swatted for a lie.
I think there's different levels of lying with regard to this partial truth. Like, the hardest ones to find are where there's partial truth and there's a little lie in there. In order to catch a lie detector, in order to catch a liar, you have to have something to lose, David. So if I got in there and I started asking you questions, hey, do you currently have a girlfriend, and you say no, et cetera, and you have nothing really to lose, right? But if I start saying, hey, on air, I want to know if you have a girlfriend, because if you don't, maybe I'm interested, except I'm married, but, you know, I want to put you on a hot seat. So in order to tell someone's lying, like, a criminal can lose their freedom. This jerk that called in that said his wife was cheating on him,
sure,
he can lose his children or his house or the wife if he's lying or she's lying. So there has to be something to lose.
Gotcha. I've been talking to Janine Driver. She is the body language expert. She's also the official body language expert for Justice Magazine. She does all kinds of seminars. Tell us where you are on the internet one more time, Janine.
LionTamer.com. LYINTAMER. LionTamer.com.
And she's not lying, Janine. You got to come visit us, or at least make another call. I'm surrounded by liars and adversaries. I need you, darling.
I'd love to be a guest on your show again. You're an extraordinary show. I think that you're doing a great job, David Lee Roth.
Thanks so much, Janine. Have a great day.
You too.
866-313-3733. This is all dovetailing. We'll be right back with some really interesting guests right after this. Ron Sculner talking about, what's her name, Heather Locklear and Richie. Was it okay for him to check his emails? Evidently, there was some, I'm going to just say it, there was some lying going on.
David Lee Roth on 92.3 Free FM.
Clive Dave へようこそ。ここでは私たちが雨を降らせるの。Rough Radio First Thing in the Morning Dave TV Nothing but yeah。
I got a very special guest here. He's the New York City entertainment lawyer that you remember from the pre-sexual agreement. And his name is Ron Scholar. Ron, welcome again.
Thanks, Dave. Okay. Always a pleasure.
Hey, so we're talking about something very current here. Everybody's familiar with Heather Locklear and Richie Sambora split. A bitter, acrimonious split, I'm certain. And it's a little bit more than musical differences, I understand. What is the case here? Explain to us what that is.
Well, Dave, what we have here is a larger issue than simply the gossip about it. What we have here is an issue of privacy. And the issue is whether or not one spouse has the right to read the other's private personal emails in a marriage.
Okay, let me set this up. She said she discovered a suggestive email that was sent to him, right?
That's correct.
And it contained provocative pictures of some gal, evidently, that he knew or whatever. And then she, what, went and checked his email? Is that the scenario? Did I get that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, speak to it. Go ahead.
Exactly, Dave. The issue is whether or not there is a right or an expectation of privacy in a marriage. Or whether when you marry someone, privacy goes out the window and you kind of own them like a dog or a cat.
Interesting question. And I'm wondering what the general folks would think. How do most people weigh in on something like this?
Well, you know, David, what this is now, we're dealing with the internet and it's still a new frontier. And there's not a lot of settled law on this that the courts have dealt with. So what we find here is we have to kind of analogize this to other types of situations. For example, you know, the internet is a means of communication, okay, like the telephone.
Sure.
Now, if the law is, at least in New York and in most jurisdictions, that you have the right to tape record any conversation that you're a party to. And you could play it for somebody. You could share it with somebody. You could do whatever you want without telling the other person.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You can do that, okay? And it may or may not be admissible in court depending upon what's on it. What you can't do is to tape record other people's conversations. That's wiretapping, and even the president gets in trouble for that. You can't do that.
Okay, now if you're working in a building and they cannot check on your phone calls, but they can check on your email, is that correct?
No. If you analogize the internet to the telephone, you have a right to do anything you want with any emails that are either sent to you or from you, but reading somebody else's emails, I believe, is analogous to a wiretap.
Even if they're married and sleeping together?
Even if they're married and sleeping together, unless it's a shared computer with the same account and the person just happens to stumble upon it, that's a little bit different. But you know, Dave, even in a marriage, an email is nothing more than an electronic letter, right?
Gotcha.
Okay. Now, if someone is married and a personal letter comes to their home and it's addressed to the other spouse, technically, under the law, you don't have a right to open that letter.
That's a federal offense?
It would be considered a federal offense. The question is, who would enforce that? Really, nobody. And it's just one of those things that technically is against the law, but is not enforced and would be kind of impossible to police if you look at it that way, too.
Okay. So what happened is now she went and took – and was this a mutually shared computer that she discovered the emails, or was this his own private apparatus?
Well, that's the only thing that in all the articles has not been stated, and that's something that's probably going to come out in court. But the issue is here, it's a privacy issue, whether or not – one spouse has the right to read the other's private emails that she knew was not for him.
This is an interesting question. What do you think? Was she allowed? Is this an actionable thing, or is she above all board? She's on a moral basis here.
Well, you know, what we're dealing with here, as far as the law goes, and we have to again analogize it to regular postal mail and to the telephone. If it turns out that this was Richie Sambora's private PC. And she went into his computer. She knew his password, or she hacked in, or she knew what it could be, or he just happened to leave it on and she did this. Then technically, I believe this is a violation. And I believe that there has to be a right of privacy even in a marriage.
Okay, but I'm going to – let me posit this, and then this is just an idea here, is that most domiciles have probably one big wage earner, okay? And there's always that question that if the husband is earning the money, does it then belong to the housewife equally, okay? We've heard this argument for many, many years. Mm-hmm. If the husband and the wife are both making a living – then I kind of see what you're talking about a little more clearly, or I concur a little bit more clearly. Mm-hmm. If both are wage earners, both have their own computers or whatnot, then that's a different kind of a domicile than if one person is paying the rent, paying the mortgage, paying the gardener and everything else, the electricity that runs the computers, and then that is their possession. Speak to that if you would.
Well, I think that's a very interesting point, but it still comes down to an issue of privacy more than finance, whether, you know, two people are both wage earners or whether, you know, the husband supporting the wife or the wife is supporting the husband. I think there still has to be an expectation of privacy even in a marriage. Of course, everybody, you know, idealistically wants total honesty and great communication and all of that. And I'm not, you know, saying that somebody, you know, should do something that's improper as far as cheating on the other spouse or whatever. But the point is that you still have certain rights, even in this age of, you know, new technology and the new frontiers. And it seems to me that at least if we were analogizing this to the telephone or to U.S. mail, this would be something that would be against the law. And I think the issue here transcends merely, you know, Heather Locklear or Richie Sambora and has to do with what right of privacy can someone have once you say, I do.
So we don't know at this point in time whether it was two separate computer terminals or whatever. But, you know, being two celebrities, two big public figures, I can see on a business level, an academic level, if nothing else, that there are a lot of secrets, that you're signing contracts, you're having conversations that are confidential, and whether or not you want to share them with your spouse becomes besides the point, becomes a matter of contractual agreement. You just can't talk about it. Or somebody shares something with you, you know, that is combustible, incendiary information. And,
in confidence.
Yeah, and you tell somebody, it's like telling seven other people. I think that's what the CIA calls it. You tell one person, that's the same as telling seven, because everybody's got a wife, everybody's got a girlfriend, everybody tells the family pet, if nobody else. But nobody keeps the secret completely ever. It's just almost inhuman to be able to do that. Again, if it's two celebs, I kind of see how you want to have that separation between church and state. But I think most domiciles, most places where people live together, they're sharing the gear. I can't imagine, you know, that in most homes there are separate computers with separate everything. Perhaps for the kids and mom and dad. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But in a relationship, a husband-wife relationship, what have you, I got to believe that it's pretty much one piece of gear that both of those individuals are using. And you're saying that there's a right of privacy there, even between spouses.
I believe there would be, especially if an email was sent to one specific person. But, you know, you raise a good point. But even notwithstanding that, you still have a right to privacy, in my view, in a marriage and even on the internet. And if, in fact, they were sharing the same computer, I think this speaks to Richie Sambora's probable innocence in the matter, because if he knew or had reason to know that that she would be reading his emails or that they would be using the same computer on the same desk on the same computer account, then he'd have to be pretty dumb to be corresponding, you know, with a paramour.
Yeah, but he's the guitar player in Bon Jovi.
Well, they've had some
and I'm not sorry. Let's take some calls. I'm fascinated how the gang is going to think about this. 866-313-3733. Take it from the top there, Hutch. Roth Radio, you're talking to Ron Scholar here. Go ahead, friend. You're on.
Hey, Ron. You know, you're forgetting about the basics, man. Marriage, two people in love, whatever, committing to each other. And how do you, if you have nothing to hide, why would you, you know what I'm saying?
No, we don't. Please explain. Illuminate just a little bit more, please.
If you have nothing to hide, why would you want to hide something in the first place?
Well, let me ask you a question. If the police or the CIA or the FBI decided, you know what, we're going to find stuff. We're going to stop every car that goes down 42nd Street and 8th Avenue between the hours of midnight and 8 o'clock in the morning. And we're going to stop 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 cars. You know what? We're going to find drugs in some. We're going to find guns in others. We're going to find God knows what. And do you think the end justifies the means? No, because there's an expectation of privacy. Yeah. If the government, excuse me, were to break into your home and search everything in every drawer, in every nook and cranny, and then every one of your neighbors and everyone on your block and everyone in your neighborhood, do you think, you know, they might find some things that might be contraband? But that doesn't excuse it. There still has to be individual rights, individual privacies, individual civil liberties. That's my take on it.
I think that even between the best of friends, the best of guys and gals, that there are polite little moments that you don't talk about. Everybody's got a little something that you don't want to talk about. What do you think of that, my friend? Phone caller, you're on.
Well, Dave, you know, it's almost like mixing religion with politics, in my eyes.
Which is popular these days, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, true. to me, emotional versus what? Politics. What is that? That's just the law. You know, a nation, whatever.
Well, Ron, is what you're speaking to here a cohesive advisement? Is this something that you're saying will create better relationships, that'll make a relationship more solvent? Your idea is that their privacies are to be observed, and you think that's a recipe for a better relationship in the future?
I think mutual respect is a necessary ingredient which will strengthen a relationship, and also there's another five-letter word called trust.
I call it selective denial.
Okay.
Pick out the things you really don't want to hear about and figure from there. Ron, you got a few more extra minutes? Can you hang with us here?
I'd love to.
Fascinating topic. Friends, don't go away. We're not lying to you. Don't check my email. We'll be right back after this. Go ahead.